Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Rita Peters with my co-host Mark Meckler, and we have an exciting update program for you this week. You probably know that Mark and I are both deeply involved in the Convention of States project. In fact, Mark co-founded the organization with Michael Ferris several years ago. He is the president, and I serve as senior vice president for legislative affairs. We're going to tell you all the details in a minute, but I want to first talk about the mission of our organization. It's to raise up an army of self-governing citizen activists. Our immediate objective is to trigger a convention under Article 5 to propose amendments that will put our federal government back in its constitutional box. So you may wonder what all of this has to do with the theme of Crossroads, which is all about addressing cultural issues from a Christian perspective. If you look around today, government is involved in almost every area of our lives. Many Americans now look to the federal government as their provider, not just an institution that's there to protect their basic rights. This leads to a sort of idolatry of government, and it also distorts the proper role of families, the church, and private organizations in society. In short, government overreach is bad for our culture. As people who love our neighbors, we have both a civic duty and a Christian duty to work toward a just government that stays in its proper place and respects the rule of law. And that's where the Convention of States comes in. Mark, tell us how the organization got started.
Sure. Well, back in 2012, I was pretty much fed up with politics. I'd been one of the founders of the Tea Party movement, and we'd accomplished so much, and then it turned into so little. Congress went right back to being everything it was. I was very frustrated with politics. And then I met Mike Ferris, and Mike Ferris, he just changed my perspective on everything because he asked me if I was satisfied with what I'd accomplished in politics. I wasn't. I was frustrated. And he said that's because I was approaching the problem incorrectly, that I was looking at it as a personnel problem in Washington, D.C., when really what we had was a structure problem. Hmm. And he explained to me that over, especially the last century, 115 years, we've broken the structure of our government, and that the only way to fix it was to call an Article 5 convention and propose amendments to the Constitution, ultimately pass those amendments, restoring the structure. He laid out a plan for doing that, and I presented it to the board of my organization, and we decided to fund the project, and that's actually how the project got started.
It's funny because Mike Ferris, whom some of our listeners might recognize that name, he was the founder of Homeschool Legal Defense Association, and now he's the president and CEO of Alliance Defending Freedom, which is a major Christian nonprofit legal organization that does so much good in this country. But when I met Mike Ferris, and he told me about Article 5 and the Convention of States project that he was starting up with you, Mark, I was just totally convinced by the sheer logic of it. I had spent years working as an attorney for the Rutherford Institute in Charlottesville. In that work, which was great work, but we were really focused on reacting to the government when it did the wrong things by litigation. And even before I met Mike Ferris, I had thought so many times, I wish there was something proactive I could do to make the government be what it's supposed to be and do what it's supposed to do. And I didn't really ever see an opportunity like that until I met Mike and he told me about Convention of States. And I thought, this is the answer. This is the way I can do something positive, proactive, and constructive to actually make a difference. So, Mark, with that little bit of background on Convention of States, tell our listeners who maybe haven't heard other programs we've done on this topic, tell them about what Article 5 is, why it exists, how it works.
So Article 5 is the fifth article in the Constitution of the United States of America. And if you've never heard of it, don't feel bad. I'm a lawyer, and I hadn't really heard of it until we started this movement, until just about a year before that. We don't even really study it in law school. It's how the Constitution can be amended. There's two ways. The first clause of Article 5 says that when two-thirds of both houses of Congress want to propose amendments, they can do so. And they put them out to the states for ratification, and it takes 34 states to ratify. The second clause says that whenever two-thirds of the states call for a convention, today that's 34 states, they can gather in convention. They too have the same power to propose amendments, just like Congress. And then those amendments go out by the same ratification process as they would, as if Congress proposed those amendments themselves. So what we decided is there were these structural breaks in the system of governance. Primarily, the federal government has exceeded its enumerated powers. That's really the core of the issue. It does way too much. It's way too big. It's involved in way too many things. And so the Convention of States Project was designed to use the second clause of Article 5 to help organize in all 50 states, ultimately to get 34 states or two-thirds of states to call for a convention. That's the process that we're engaged in right now.
And Mark, do we know why the founders included this second method of proposing amendments? All 27 amendments that we have right now were proposed by Congress. So the second method, the convention for proposing amendments, has never been used. Why did the founders give it to us?
You know, we actually know that really clearly because we have Madison's notes from convention. September 15, 1787, which is 2 days before the end of convention, Colonel George Mason from your home state of Virginia stands up and he says, "We have a real problem with the document we've drafted. We've given the power to Congress to propose amendments if they should deem them necessary, but we've not given the same power to the states, to the people acting through the states." And he asked a question. He said, "Are we so naive that we believe that a federal government that becomes a tyranny will ever propose amendments to restrain its own tyranny?" And of course, that's never happened. No tyrant restrains their own tyranny. And so a vote was taken that they proposed actual language that was proposed by Eldridge Gerry. And a vote was taken. There was no debate. Nobody disagrees. And it is unanimously inserted in the Constitution to give the states this power. So the purpose was push back against federal tyranny.
That certainly seems to make sense. It sounds like this convention method of proposing amendments is basically in Article 5 of the Constitution as one of the checks and balances of the whole constitutional system, so that if Congress gets too big or gets too powerful or starts doing things the wrong way, the states can step in and use the amendment process as sort of a final check. So again, it sounds so logical to me and so obvious. Why do you think this process has never been used by the states?
Yeah, I think it is logical and obvious. I think it's the ultimate act of federalism. And I think the reason it's never been used, it's not that it's never been tried. It's that no particular approach has ever gotten to 34 states or two-thirds of states. And the reason I think that is it's really hard. This is the highest bar in the entire system of American governance. There is nothing else in our system of governance that requires two-thirds of the states just to agree to have a meeting about something, and then ultimately three-quarters of states to ratify. So it takes literally millions of people over a period of many years to reach that kind of consensus, and the founders intended that. They didn't want it to be easy for us to change our Constitution. And thank God they set it up this way, because our Constitution has been very stable. We have the longest lived Constitution in the history of the world right now.
So I want to say a couple words to the audience about what this is and what it isn't. Because some people, when they hear us talk about an Article 5 convention, their minds immediately go to, oh, it's a new constitutional convention. They want to write a new constitution. And we don't want that because we love our constitution. So this is absolutely not that. This is a convention that's limited to proposing amendments to the constitution we already have. So it's also not a convention where the states go in and make amendments to the Constitution. All they can do is propose amendments that then 3/4 of the states, that's 38 states, have to ratify in order for them to become effective. So do you think there's confusion about that today?
Oh, there is. And I would say there is confusion that is intentionally caused by people who oppose this. Number one, they call it a con-con, which is short and derogatory for constitutional convention. It's not that. They can't draft a new constitution from scratch. All they can do is make suggestions. And that's really important. You know, I can say, Rita, in my entire life, I've never had a fear of a meeting where people would have a discussion and make some suggestions. It's not scary. All they can do is get together in this convention and say, hey, states, we think these are some amendments you ought to consider.
Yes.
And then it's going to go out to the whole nation, and it takes 3/4 of states to ratify. It really has to be something pretty mainstream, center of the road, in order to get 3/4 of the states to ratify. So I think some people think that this convention can just do whatever they want to do, that they have some kind of legal authority. Nothing could be further from the truth.
That's right. And we've already explained that in order to trigger the convention, it takes 2/3 of the state legislatures, that's 34 state legislatures, to apply for a convention. And a really important piece of that is these 34 states that apply have to agree on the purpose or the agenda, effectively, for the convention in order for their applications to count as part of the 34. So for our audience, the application that the Convention of States Project is working on limits the topics that the convention would consider proposing amendments on to 3, and they are imposing fiscal restraints on the federal government, limiting the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, and setting term limits for federal officials and members of Congress. So that's what we're working on. Mark, how close are we?
Well, I'm really excited to report we just passed the halfway mark. So that's the 17 state just passed. In the last couple of weeks, we've had Wisconsin pass and Nebraska pass. Mm-hmm. And so we're getting close. I mean, the momentum is with us. We're seeing a lot of uptake in the media right now, which is pretty extraordinary because people are noticing this is happening. There are over 5 million people involved. Right now, we're really on the move in Iowa and Kansas and Pennsylvania and Ohio and West Virginia. So I think things are moving pretty quickly. Look, 8 years we've been doing this, 8.5 years, it's a long time. But in the scheme of things, the way the founders intended it, I think we're moving pretty quickly right now.
Yeah, and I want to tell our audience a little bit about what it is we actually do to try to make this happen. So, of course, Mark, you travel the nation. You go to state legislatures across the country, as does our new senior advisor, former Senator Rick Santorum. And you talk to legislators. You answer their questions. You testify in committee hearings. But we are first and foremost a grassroots organization, right? And I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about our grassroots and what their role in all of this is.
Yeah, like the whole organization really revolves around them and is built to serve them. If you think of a normal, say, corporate structure, organizational structure, the CEO, the president is at the top, and you've got executive leadership, and then middle management, and then whoever you would consider your line employees. And in our organization, I would say we have that pyramid. It's just completely upside down.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is I'm the president and CEO of the organization. My job is just to serve everybody else. And, you know, Rita, you're part of the executive staff there, and you direct our national legislative efforts, and you're also counsel. And your job is to serve everybody else, right? Mm-hmm. And so below you, we've got, or really above you in our pyramid, we've got our regional directors, right? And you
yep.
serve all of them.
Yep.
And everybody else who has legislative needs. And then they've got people who are state directors and legislative liaisons and media liaisons, all the state staff, all of those people are volunteers and they serve all of those. And then what I would describe as our line employees are our volunteers, the people mm-hmm. who go to the state legislatures, who write emails, who make phone calls. They're at the top of our pyramid.
Yeah.
Everybody in our organization is here to support them. So it's really all about the grassroots, because I can be here, you can be here, our regional directors can be here. If there aren't literally millions of grassroots in the field who are calling their legislators, showing up at the capitals and doing all the hard work, there's no organization. So that's the way the organization lays out. First and foremost, I'm just a grassroots guy. I mean, I come from the grassroots. I love grassroots politics. I think grassroots are what make this country great. It's because of regular people out there. So the whole organization is built around the idea of serving grassroots activists.
Yes, I can attest to that. We definitely have what we call a servant leadership ethic in our organization that's really important to us. And our grassroots volunteers across the country are amazing. We're organized in every single state. And, you know, when Dean Welty and I used to host the show together, we used to often say, we don't believe in being a chit-chat society. We're not interested in having our name on a list of some club that just talks about things. If we're going to give our time and energy to something, we want to be doing something. We want to be useful and making a difference. And that is exactly what our grassroots organization does. As part of my job, every week I stream online these committee hearings and floor debates about our resolution across the country. And I see these crowds of our volunteers that show up to every single meeting in force. They wear their COS buttons, they testify in the legislature, they attend rallies. And then the rest of the year, when they're not doing that, they're writing letters to their legislators. They're telling their friends and neighbors about this effort to restore the republic. They are just such an incredible group of patriots. And I want to encourage everyone who's listening, if you'd like to learn more and get involved, go to conventionofstates.com, sign the petition, and then click on that Take Action tab that'll tell you some next steps to getting involved. So, Mark, we already said we've passed in 17 states so far. We're halfway there. Just want to recite the list so everyone knows. The 17 that have already passed are Georgia, Florida, Alaska, Alabama, Indiana, Missouri, Tennessee, Louisiana, Arkansas, Utah, Oklahoma, Texas, Mississippi, North Dakota, Arizona, and just this year so far, Wisconsin and Nebraska. So before we move on, Mark, I know the listeners are wondering, what about Virginia? So just you tell us briefly where Virginia stands.
Sure. Look, Virginia, we were very close previously. We did very well in the House, passed the House, got held over into the Senate. And unfortunately, we had a couple of Republican senators there that held us up when the Senate was Republican. Like, I'm always really transparent. I'm happy to name names. Like, a couple of our real problems were Dick Black and Amanda Chase. So that was a serious problem for us. I think we're going to come back stronger than ever. Obviously, the Virginia House of Delegates just flipped and went to Republican. I think we're going to be strong there again, as we always have been. I believe in 2023 that the Senate is going to flip back. Mm-hmm. And so our job right now is getting prepared for that eventuality and making sure that our grassroots are engaged, making sure that we're educating senators right now so that after that 2023 election in 2024, that we can go ahead and pass quickly in Virginia.
Yeah, absolutely. That's certainly my hope, and I hope to help our Virginia team work toward that. And some states that could be next on the list for this year yet include our neighbor, West Virginia, Iowa, South Carolina, and North Carolina. And there's a long list of other states that are still considering the resolution this year. Mark, I know that polling done across the country indicates that about two-thirds of American voters support Convention of States, and that's across party lines. So that is an incredible thing, I think, in today's very divided political climate to find two-thirds of Americans to agree on anything. Why would anyone be opposed to reining in federal power, setting term limits, and imposing fiscal restraints on Washington? Tell us a little bit about the opposition.
Sure. Well, the main opposition comes from the radical left in America. It's led by George Soros organizations. I always feel funny saying that, you know, because everybody wants to make George Soros the boogeyman. In this case, he really is. because it comes from Common Cause, which is his policy organization, Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, which is also his policy organization. And those two organizations organized a press release about 4 years ago with 230 originally, now over 250 of the most radical organizations in the United States of America. It includes Planned Parenthood, La Raza, MoveOn.org, Code Pink, Socialist Party of America, all the giant public employee unions, you name it. They all signed a press release saying this is the worst thing that could possibly happen in America. And now when I'm testifying in the legislatures, we see all these groups show up. In fact, in the last week, one of the things that I saw, which I'd not seen before, is now the Sierra Club is testifying against us. You know, they have nothing to do with constitutional issues. It's just all the radical leftists standing together. And the reason that they're doing it is very obvious. They like centralized power. They're Marxists. They want all the control in the federal government. They don't want states to be free to do what they want. They don't want people to be free. They want government to tell us what to do. And so, of course, they stand against it. The weird part is there's a couple of odd bedfellows out there. So, for example, standing with Planned Parenthood is the John Birch Society. Standing with La Raza and Code Pink is Eagle Forum. And these are groups that have been co-opted, essentially, by the radical left, who share talking points with the radical left. And by the way, groups who, for example, especially Eagle Forum, who I generally agree with. But on this issue, they have been led astray, and they stand with the Marxists, the communists. To be very blunt, they stand with the, I don't call them pro-choice, they stand with the baby killers. They stand with people who are immoral and unethical and, frankly, evil in this country. In opposing this, I think they're grossly mistaken, and I think they're doing grave damage.
I think you're absolutely right that, you know, these leftist organizations, it's easier for them to be able to concentrate all their efforts on controlling the elites, the power cabal in Washington, D.C. That's a lot easier than trying to control all of the state legislatures across the country. And if they can control or heavily influence Washington, D.C. and get it to make policy for the entire country, that just makes it a lot easier for them to reach their goals. So, you know, it kind of makes sense that they would be opposed. The shame of this is that the organizations on the right that you mentioned that are in opposition, they're not opposed because of principle. I think they're opposed because of fear and because in a lot of cases they just haven't done their homework to understand how the process actually would work and the safeguards in the process. Tell us a little bit about why this is a safe process, Mark.
Yeah, you know, look, I think the easiest way to explain it is simple math. And basically the way the math works is, even if you assume everything they say, that we should all be afraid of this, that maybe this meeting where they make suggestions, they're going to make crazy suggestions. None of that's true, by the way, and we can go into that. But even if you assume all of that's true, and let's say, for example, what comes out of convention, and I hear this, by the way, all the time from Eagle Forum folks or John Birch Society, we're going to lose the Second Amendment. Well, now let's say that gets out of convention. By the way, it takes 26 states to say that. That's crazy. It can't happen. But let's say that happens. It takes 38 states to ratify. And I challenge people to do the math. I'll do it here on your show. I've given this offer to literally millions of people around the country. Tell me which 38 states are going to ratify the repeal of the Second Amendment. Just send me a list. Ed. My email address is mmeckler@cosaction.com. And here's why that's so ridiculous. And you laugh because it's laughable. Because there are actually today 24 states where you can carry your handgun into the state legislature. I know because I do this regularly. I travel with a firearm wherever I legally can, and I carry it in wherever I legally can. My understanding is there are 15 states where you can actually sling a long gun across your back and sit in the gallery. Now, I'm not saying that's a good idea. I'm just saying you can legally, right? Now, remember, so if it takes 38 states to ratify, that means it takes only 13 states to stop it. That's the inverse math. And so if you have 24 states where you can carry your handgun in the state legislature, and that's how the state feels about guns, how do you think you're going to find 38 states to ratify the repeal of the Second Amendment? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's absurd. And I would say, Rita, at this point, it's offensive, because it's not that they don't know, these people who are opponents. They know. They've heard these arguments. We've said it. We've showed them the proof. We've done the math with them. They claim there's no law around Article 5. We've given them the book, the treatise written by Professor Rob Nadelson called The Law of Article 5. There's plenty of law. At this point, it's just straight up dishonest.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. I don't think there's any way around it. So let's look at this from a positive perspective before we wrap up. What are some of the amendments that you would hope might come out of this? And let's talk a little bit about your vision for how this can actually get the country back on track.
I want to say generically, what I think is really important is we're so divided as a nation. Everybody's so concerned about that. And the way that we fix that, generically speaking, is stop making all the decisions in D.C. Because if it's a Democrat administration, Republicans are upset. If it's a Republican administration, Democrats are upset. So let's get the power out of D.C. and get it back to the states. That's the most important thing we can do. And then you get back to laboratories of democracy, and then you can live where you want, conservative, liberal, whatever you want. That's the way to health for the nation. Mm-hmm. Specifically, things like a balanced budget amendment. You know, the federal government is out of control with its spending. People agree on this across partisan lines. 85% of people think we need some form of balanced budget amendment. About the same number, 80 to 85% of people polled over 30 years believe we need term limits on Congress. I would add term limits on the bureaucracy, the deep state, staffers. These are places where we now know the problems are deep and severe. So the vast majority of people in the American public support that. And then the last, and I think the sweet spot for this whole thing, is limits on federal power. There were enumerated powers listed in the Constitution. I believe it was 17 of them originally. Those are the things that the federal government is supposed to do. They now do way more than that. And we need to put it back in the box. About 72% of Americans at last poll that I saw say the federal government's too big and does too much. So these are the kinds of things we're going to be able to do. Like, how about saying an amendment to get rid of the Department of Education or Health and Human Services or the Department of Homeland Security, things that they were never intended to do.
This is the way. It's our last best hope to restore the republic. I know you believe that. That's why you've dedicated your life to this. I certainly believe it too. And I'm grateful for all that you do, Mark. I hope our listeners will go to conventionofstates.com and get involved. And unfortunately, we're out of time. We want to thank our generous sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services, Blessings Christian Bookstore, Sunshine Ministries with Christian Radio, Wishing Well Florists and Travel Services, and our good friends at New Beginnings Church and Garber's Church of the Brethren in Harrisonburg. Thank you all for listening and for your financial support. If you'd like to make a donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia, 22803. I'm Rita Peters with Mark Meckler and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week for another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet.
Rejoice, 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 rej